The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Really excited. I probably shouldn't be bragging like this, not at the very top of the show. Yeah, I just got my certificate. I took some media continuing education classes, and it was a course on, I graduated, training me to be like, articulate and stuff. That's what it was. And, they kind of maybe said that I could sort of, do with okay on that sort of topic. Good to have you with me. Yeah, I flunked a course. All right. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. Let me get this computer to pay attention to me first. All right. The number to get onto the program is very simple. It's 10 digits, 877-573-7825, 877-57 equal. That's the first step. Second step, talk to Eric Dumont, call Screamer there in Ann Arbor. Third step should have probably been before the first step, which is you have to have a reason to call. A question about something in your life, your circumstances, your situation. Maybe just want to hear a thought or two from some person, some faceless person on the radio, which is me. I am a psychologist. I was at the office this morning and yesterday. I'm seeing a lot more people these days simply because I'm not traveling anywhere near as much. Although, we'll be heading out to Kansas. Oh, man, it's been a long time since I've been there, for sure. I was there, when was it? It was probably when Divine Mercy Radio was just starting 10 years ago. And Donetta told me, we've pretty much forgotten anything you had to say, so we're bringing you back. It'll be Salina and Hayes this weekend. Now, as I understand it, they're full for the venues where they are. So good to be on the road again a little bit. 877-573-7825. If you have a question about something in your life, some person in your life, if you have a suggestion, something helpful to someone, you can do that. And also, if you wish to dispute me, the rule is if you disagree with me or dispute me, you are first up. That's just sort of the way it is. And I know I was asked by my producer man, Andrew Kruchek, wouldn't that just be a way of somebody getting in line first? Just to say I don't agree with him? No, I like to talk to my wife when she calls. 877-57 equal, that's the number, to call to get on to the program. Are you grateful? And what are you grateful about? Oh, I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for my faith. I'm grateful that I have a house to live in. I'm grateful I have enough food. I'm grateful I have a job. I'm grateful I can hear, I can walk, I can see, I can breathe, I can think. That's all good stuff. But let's do a little math. The population of the world right now is somewhere between 7 and 8 billion. That's our estimate. You can't really know for sure. Too hard to keep track. Not going to get census people gone into Calcutta in the very worst parts of the city and saying, okay, now tell me, how many children do you have? What are their names? Mm-hmm. What grade are they in? That's not going to happen. Now, China, again, roughly 1.4 billion. India, 1.2 billion, so that's 2.6 billion with a B. Throw in many of the Muslim religious countries, and you've got another billion and a half. Now, you're up around 4-something billion. Europe's 500 plus million. So let's say 5 billion. And an estimate of the number of confessing or identified Christians in the world is about 2 billion. Catholics, 1.2, and then the rest of Christianity, 800 mil. Something. These are all just really rough numbers. Now, of those 2 billion, you divide that, let's just say by 8 billion. 2 by 8 billion, that's 2 over 8 is 25%. 25%. Now, that's assuming that everybody there takes the faith very seriously. They want to be a disciple of Christ. If you believe surveys, it's, maybe 10, 20% of that. Maybe. Let's just say 15%. Okay, 15% of 2 billion is 300 million. Population of the world, 8 billion. Let's see. So 300 divided by 8 billion is just shy of 4%. If you were born in a time or a place, which you were, where you were exposed to the faith, you had God-given grace to open your eyes, and you believed, you are in a tiny minority. Furthermore, you didn't choose where you were going to be born. You didn't say, I want to be born to this mom, this dad, and in this particular Catholic parish, and I want to learn all about the faith. I want to be born in a place where I can hear Catholic radio and I can swing around and come back to the church. You had no choice in any of that. You want to call it the luck of the draw? You could. Obviously, we believe in God's providence, but here's the point. The fact that you know what you know about Jesus Christ and his church, and you believe what you know about Jesus Christ and his church, and you wish with everything in your being to persevere to someday stand before him and hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." You are in an unbelievably tiny group of people. Now, I'm not sitting here saying all the rest of the world is going to fry. Of course not. It's not my call at all, and the church doesn't make that call either. However, we're just talking about people who know Christ and know his church. You were given that. You realize that? You were given that. Nothing you really did at all to be born at the time and place you were and to grow up where you did. You didn't have a choice. It was a gift. That gift should make you so grateful, if you pondered it for any length of time, that all this other stuff that frustrates you or makes you angry or makes you think that God's not looking out for you or makes you think, why can't I have a better car? Why can't I have this? Why can't I do that? Why don't I have children like this? Why isn't my spouse nicer? Whatever it is that is dinging up or destroying your peace would lose some of its power if you focused on just exactly what you've been given in the way of the opportunity to believe. That gift dwarfs every other thing in your life. It is too easy to focus on what isn't going right, who isn't nice to us, what I don't have. It's too easy. I'm not saying you can't work on it. I'm not saying it won't bother you. But what I'm saying is, if you keep right in front of your face the idea that you have been given the knowledge and the grace to believe, what? I don't think we think about that enough. I know I don't. I get too caught up in the temporal stuff. But if you think about that more, I guarantee you, your mood will get better. And you won't be quite so frustrated by the stuff that happens every day that can threaten to bring you down. You would even probably better like listening to this program. You could put up with me. 877-573-7825. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you.
They betrayed me. They didn't keep their promise. They tricked me, and I don't care anymore.
Come in. Pull up a couch. Let's talk. The doctor is in.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Who is the Creator's masterpiece? The Catholic Catechism says that God's masterwork of the mission of the Son and the Spirit is the all-holy, ever-Virgin Mary. She, for the first time, was the dwelling where the Father could place His Son and His Spirit to live among men. The Church, says the Catechism, has often read the most beautiful texts on wisdom as relating to Mary. She is acclaimed in liturgy as the seat of wisdom. The Holy Spirit prepared Mary for her great task by filling her with grace, and by sheer grace she was conceived without sin. It was appropriate that she, in whom the eternal Son would dwell, would herself be without any stain of original sin. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism. Please visit us at our website, www.maltausa.org.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Over the last 50 years, we've had some of the greatest popes since the Reformation era. So why are things such a mess in American Catholicism? How do we analyze and confront the attacks we're facing? How do we identify wolves in sheep's clothing? How do we re-evangelize the baptized? Dr. Ralph Martin makes sense of a church in crisis and shows pathways forward. He'll make sense of a disordered world. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and you'll find it in our online bookstore.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. Andrew, did you get that email that I forwarded on to you about the bumper music? Yeah, see that? They're complimenting you. You get more compliments on email than I do. I was keeping score. Right now it's you 12, me 4. Good to have you with me. Got some folks I'm going to talk to. I should be able to get to everybody up there. You want to get in the queue. Is that the way you pronounce it, or is it Quay? 877-573-7825. Tammy from Houghton, Michigan. Hi, Tammy.
Hello. Thank you for hearing me.
Well, I'll tell you.
Kind of a question.
Sure.
How do I know if I'm doing enough for the Lord?
Well, you're not. I'll tell you that right now.
No, I know I'm not. I know I'm not, but how do I keep going? How do I, you know, I get to the point where I find myself coming and going, yet I know I'm still not doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
Do I just keep going?
Do you know why I said that you're not doing enough for the Lord?
No.
Not because I know you, because I don't.
Because you can never do enough for the Lord.
Yes, none of us can.
Awesome from us.
And that's not how he grades. That isn't how he grades. I got this worry that I'm going to be standing in line in heaven behind Mother Teresa. And I'm going to hear our Lord say to Mother Teresa, "You know, Teresa, you could have done more." I'll tell you, I'd sneak out of that line real fast. Father Larry Richards, Father Larry Richards often says, if somebody were to ask you, why do you think you can get to heaven? He says, you never say, because I'm a good person, because I do lots of wonderful things, because I serve the Lord better than 99.26% of people. He says, because Jesus died for me.
True, true.
So, Tammy, the good news and the bad news. The bad news is, yes, you could probably do more, as can we all, and it's good to have that attitude. I want to do more. I want to obey better. Yeah, that's a wonderful attitude. But here's the good news. You can't sit there and say, well, let's see, there's some demarcation line that if I get above it, then I can relax. And I can say, I've done enough for the Lord now. Okay, goody. Not going to happen, Tammy. You have put yourself in an unwinnable situation. The fact that you want to do good is wonderful. Aren't the Lord's working in you? But the fact that you say, I just feel like I'm falling short. I'm just not doing enough, and I just don't have the peace that he said I'm supposed to have. Notice how I whine. Notice that's a very good whine, isn't it? You can whine with vowels. Yeah. You can't whine with consonants. You can whine with vowels. If you get that attitude, my dear, you won't have the peace the Lord says. So, to summarize this all up, yes, it's wonderful that you think I'd like to do more. That's great. We Christians should all be thinking like that. No, in the sense that if I do more, then I got a straighter shot to heaven. That just isn't our faith.
True.
There you go. So, how
that
wonderful.
Lost in it.
Yeah. Look at this, Tammy. I'm going to make a list of the things you need to do. And then you do them, check them off, and then write me back, and I'll decide. I'll give you a grade, and I'll decide if you've done enough. What do you think?
Man, that don't work.
You're
that
right.
That don't work.
Okay. You sound delightful. Thank you for your call, Tammy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome, dear. Now, see, this is what I like to do when I often talk about you call anytime during the program. You have pretty much an equal chance of getting on, depending upon your topic and sometimes some as little as your phone quality. Well, okay, we just talked about a quasi-heavy religious question. I go from that, and I immediately go to being a money changer in the temple with Joanne, who's calling from very, very close to here, Akron, Ohio. She says, "What? I mean, this is an underhand pitch to me, and when I used to be able to hit, I could have knocked it into the left center gap. Well, now I hope to find a hole in the infield and dribble it through." Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Can I recommend a program for parents on raising kids?
Absolutely, I hope.
You come to the right place.
Good.
All righty. In a way, Joanne, I can't, in the sense that the materials I have are all in book form or DVD form. They aren't actual set up programs where you go for 8 weeks and you answer in a workbook and you do those kinds of things. Those things are out there, but I'll tell you, my experience with those things has not been good. Because they tend to be, well, for my blood, a little too psychologically correct. And they say that you have to do it this way or your kid won't be this. or you don't discipline because this is why discipline is not good. Or if you do discipline, then you do it like this because any other kind of discipline is a little too heavy-handed. Those programs, well, let me give you a small example. Small example, my dear. There's a program out, very, very popular in the schools and in the churches. I won't name it. It was probably in the 70s and 80s. Oh, my, this thing sold boatloads of stuff to everybody. And it was a structured program for several weeks. One of the chapters was 10 obstacles to communicating with adolescents. And then they listed these 10 things that you as a parent are not supposed to do. Some of them made sense. You know, you don't yell at the kid. You don't sit there and negotiate endlessly. But let me tell you three of the other things they said in this program, Joanne. One, do not tell a child what is right or what is wrong. That's moralizing. Another one, don't ask any questions. That's interrogation. Another
one. I don't want that one.
And that was the most popular one, by the way. I would suggest this. If you go to my website, all my stuff is listed there. You can look at it, and I know some places have used the books and the DVDs and said, yeah, we can make something out of this. We can do two chapters at a time.
Okay.
You look at it and you decide, hey, that looks good. Or you can say, there's four of them here. For example, my most recent book was Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World.
Okay.
That deals heavily with technology and what technology is doing and media to shape our children's souls in all the wrong ways. So that one can be coupled with discipline that lasts a lifetime, which is 100 of the most common discipline questions I get asked as a parent, from parents. You can take that one and say, okay, we're going to study these 10 questions this week, those 10 questions next week, 10 questions a week after that. You can do that. It lends itself very well. And then I sell a book and make about $3.
Okay.
All right. So check it out, dear. See what you think.
Bye.
Thank you so much. You're welcome.
God bless. Bye.
Now, see, these people are going, yeah, well, wait a minute. He's just pushing his own product. Hey, do you know how much I make on a book? If they buy it off of any place, Catholic bookstore, Amazon, I get about 40 cents. So it doesn't really behoove me to say, yeah, go out and buy a book. Now, if you buy it straight from me, I can make a little more because I'm the middleman. There's nobody else in the middle other than me. All right, I got about 3 minutes, so I can go to Mark, and if I have to carry him over, I can. Mark from Fort Worth, Texas. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
Appreciate the call, buddy.
Thank you. I apologize that I couldn't warn the call screener, but this is also a follow-up from 5 years ago.
I remember it. It was a Tuesday afternoon. It was about 1:26, right before break. I remember, yeah.
So I definitely agree with your monologue earlier because my pastor said something very similar in 2005 when I decided to go into a crisis of faith, and his straight answer was, you don't have enough information on what your family gave you for free, and unless you explore the gift that they gave you, you can't have a crisis over it.
Wow, he said it a lot nicer than I did. Wow.
And then the follow-up portion of this is I had mentioned that my dad didn't understand when I saw my kids as siblings as opposed to my own children, and it turned out to be just a misunderstanding. From his perspective, he was too distant from his own siblings growing up, so he never considered his own children like his younger brothers and sisters. So that was actually cool to find out. But the actual question I'm calling about today, because I trust your advice very much, my wife has gotten into the habit, even though she's a practicing Catholic, of seeing concerns in the future as immediate and almost quality of life threatening, even though we don't have enough information to make that determination that it's a very serious problem. And then she stews on it with or without more information for weeks on an end, making it the biggest issue she has.
Okay. Stay right there, Mark. Stay right there because we got shut off because of this break. We'll pick you up on the other side of the break. 877-573-7825. Love to hear from you.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Our family had been going through crisis. Little by little, we just found ourselves drifting completely away. I was afraid to go back. I mean, I cried the first time I received the sacraments again. Cried because I was back and because I had allowed God to become a part of me again. It's united our family. There's peace in our home that we didn't have before.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. It's one of those complicated dances I could never, ever learn. Is that a tango? By the way, you know, in the language of espionage and counter-espionage, and even law enforcement, tango means bad guy. Yeah, should be bad person. But I mean, talking to Mark from Fort Worth, Texas, his wife conjures up a lot of fears about future possibilities, and it definitely torments her for a while. Hi, Mark.
Howdy.
Can you give me an example?
Well summarizes it.
Yeah. Can you give me an example?
Sure. Termites. So we had a termite infestation. We went out and got a pest control service, and they insured the house, and everything should be taken care of. And she saw a different kind of termite and came back to me and said, "This could be destroying our home. We need to have our house and property rechecked." And I told her that periodic inspections were a part of it. And if anything breaks, they'll fix it. And she still stood on it for 3 or 4 weeks, telling me that unless they immediately checked our property, we were going to be homeless.
Wow.
And I don't know how to deal with that kind of paranoia. I mean, paranoia may be the poor word, but like, I was raised much more nonchalantly. Problems are fixed when they come up, not considered when they're non-existent.
And what would have happened had you not got somebody to come out there and take care of those inspection of those different kind of termites?
She would have thought I was being irresponsible, and if I had tried to solve it myself, she would have been in fear that I was not skilled enough to take care of an infestation, and I was endangering the lives of herself and our children.
Boy, you can't win on that one. How often do these kind of fears come up?
About 3 a month.
Are they always, see, that's not an emotional issue. The termites, Are they issues about the children getting sick? Would it be an issue about something
it
regarding
would be
COVID?
COVID exposure, the condition of the cars, whether the water bill is accurate, whether we have foundation breaks, whether the roof needs to be professionally inspected. She can always sign something while we're just clunking along that has not been addressed and could be an immediate danger.
She ever gone to any kind of counseling?
Not that I'm aware of.
If you were to suggest it, and if you were to say, I'll go with you, what would you meet?
Too expensive. The budget needs to be saved for things that need to be fixed.
How many years has this been going on?
I've known her for 10, and we've been married for 7.
And it's been since the beginning.
Yes, sir. At the beginning, it was just providing her more information, would quiet her down, and having actions and resolution plans would take care of it rather quickly. But the more children and apparently the more responsibility we've gained with home ownership has increased it to the point where I can't solve it with information anymore. And I was wondering if there was a different...
Yeah, there is. There's therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy would help, you know.
Okay.
But I would say this. In her calmer moments, does she recognize that she's creating a lot of what-if scenarios? Does she say, I know what I'm thinking is irrational. I know it's a problem. I recognize that, but it just eats away at me. Or does she truly think, nope, the way I'm looking at it, the way I'm thinking about it, there is a legitimate risk here, and we need to take care of it?
In the calmer moments, it's the former, and it was for quite a while just a joke. Like, I know this is irrational now that we've taken care of it, but then we fall right back into it when it's a new issue that she thinks is a concern.
I would wonder if you ever talked to her parents that as a little girl she was a fretter. You ever get any inkling of that?
And she always had something happy to say.
What do you mean by that?
She was a very cheerful person, constantly laughing at the world because it was humorous to her.
Okay. So her parents, or whatever you know, and whatever information has trickled in, it's not that, oh, yeah, she's always been kind of a worrier. She's always been a fretter. I remember when she was in the third grade, she had to blah, 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 and that just tormented her for 3 weeks.
Yeah, no.
That's interesting because I would have expected that temperamental bent would have been there from the beginning, and I still suspect it was. Nobody's told you. Mark, I'm telling you, this is something where you're going to have to pick and choose which ones you're going to follow through on. And maybe there'll be a time when you'll say, I'm not going to fix that. We can't fix it. It's not worth fixing it. It's too low a possibility, and we can't spend the money on it. And see what happens. Whether she gets incredibly distressed or she finally, after 3 days, says, yeah, gee, I realize I was kind of foolish. I think I'd also ask her, do you like living this way? Do you like constantly worrying about what possible risk could occur? I would also ask her, if she's a religious person, I would say, well, how does this jive with your faith that you are unsettled about so many things? What does that mean to you? Is your faith not a source of comfort? Yes, it is a source of comfort, but these things happen. They happen all the time to people of good faith. I don't know what kind of response you'll get, but I guess I would probably approach it from the perspective of, one, it'd be nice if she could go talk to somebody. If not, two, I would rather than trying to give her information about everything she says, you know, this could happen, we could have this kind of termite, I saw it on the internet, and these termites are not, you have to have somebody come out here that knows what they're doing to check for these kind of termites because your whole house can be destroyed. So you try to give her information and it doesn't work. I'd probably focus more on the process. What is it? What is it for you that is so frightful? Why, after the fact, do you realize it was irrational, but while you're in it, you don't realize it was irrational? It's what I would do. You know, it's you're asking a very, very tough question, Mark, which is, I've got somebody who is emotionally distraught about a lot of things, and she doesn't respond to reason. And how do I make her respond to reason? Good one. Keep focusing on what she's doing to herself, as opposed to, let me give you information and then maybe you'll settle down about this.
Hi, Mark.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can, my whole self, to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When was the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
Writers will tell you that if you're going to write anything that is snappy, using just the right word, a thesaurus needs to be your constant companion. So I have a thesaurus on my phone, a little app, that I'm constantly referring to as I work a sentence and say, I'd like a better word than that. I'm going to get rid of the thesaurus because it's snooty. It's condescending. If I type in a word and I mistype it, the thesaurus, whoever's in charge of it, and I think there's just somebody somewhere in Nova Scotia that is reading these things, says, oops, did you mean, and then they give you this big long list of otherwise somewhat similarly alphabetized words. And I just feel like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. And then I wanted to write a letter to the thesaurus and say, I'm sorry, I misspelled the word. Yesterday, for example, and I'm going to get to Anonymous from Oklahoma just in 1 second here. I put in meta, M-E-T-A, because I was going to talk about a meta-analysis on something. I wanted to make a point about some research finding. So I typed in meta. Figured, okay, meta is a word that means beyond or all-encompassing. and she just wouldn't let me. Did you mean, and then she listed 27 words that weren't even remotely close in meaning to metta. Meta? So I don't know, my thesaurus just puts me down constantly. It's definitely dinging up my linguistic self-image. All right, we have what sounds like a young mother from Oklahoma who is running head-on into some realities. And she's saying, okay, Dr. Ray, talk me down from the ledge. Hi, Mom.
Hi. So I know that you're always telling us as a general radio audience that, you know, you take away, you know, toys, you give them vegetables for lunch or, you know, all these kind of things. And I have worked on that and worked on that, and it doesn't seem to be helping. And I have tried putting my three-year-old in the corner, and she absolutely throws a fit. She will get on the floor. She will, you know, fight me.
How immature!
I know, isn't it? My thing is, I'm finding, and I need some clarification on this, I'm finding that I'm having a balance between, you know, giving her her positive reinforcement as opposed to her negative reinforcement. And I need some help with that.
And you came to me. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, I know you are desperate. You are, my dear. Okay. Well, do you go to confession?
Yes.
How long have you been going to confession?
Roughly 30 years.
30 years. When you go, do you have different sins every time you go, or do you sort of get frustrated with yourself because it really sounds like the bulk of the stuff you're saying you've said before over and over?
Sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, you probably have maybe not every single time you go to confession you say the exact same thing, but there certainly is a lot of overlap from previous confessions. Is that safe to say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you've been going to confession for 30 years. Let's see, that's 10 times your daughter's age. I got a question for you, Mom.
What?
Why are you still doing those things? I don't understand. I would think you would have learned by now, and you would have stopped that. Do you know the parallel I'm drawing here? Yes, no?
In a way, whole drawing yourself out of it. Okay, what can I do better? You know?
Well, no, here's what I'm saying. Your little girl's only 3 years old. Now, whatever discipline you use with a three-year-old can work somewhat. But because she's only three, there's no way she's going to stop doing the things she's doing. That's just not going to happen. What you're going to do is you're going to, over time, let's just say years, teach her that, well, if you do these things, honey, this is not good, and here's what mommy's going to do in response. Okay? That's the first thing I want to say. When we say that what I'm trying is not working with this three-year-old, the comfort here, Mom, is that she's only three and that you have many more years. Okay, I don't know too many three-year-olds who don't misbehave no matter what you do. They're three. That's the first thing. So that'll give you a little bit of settledness. Secondly, you said something significant. You said when you try to use the corner, she melts down. Just flat out melts down. Are you saying she doesn't stay in the corner?
Most of the time, yeah. Okay. She'll fight me, and so it's a battle.
Okay. Let's do this. Let's not battle her. See, you've told me something that's good news and bad news. The bad news is she's defying you. She's not gonna take your discipline. I don't want this. I'm gonna resist it. I hate it. Okay, that's the bad news. The good news is that you think your discipline is not working in part because you're not able to enforce it. In other words, if you're using timeout and she's fighting you every step of the way, then you're not really using time out. You're not doing it. It's just a battle. You're not telling her, go to the corner, serve your time, and then come out. You're saying, go to the corner, throw a fit, and then we'll battle. Which, again, is going to teach her just to carry on. So here's what I would suggest. Very simple. When she does this, and she just melts down. Okay, fine, cool. Just walk away. And she figures, oh, good, good. Now, I don't have to go in the corner, and I defeated Mom. Piece of cake. I can do that every time. However, she's going to ask you for something, whatever that might be, her stuffed animal, her favorite juice cup, a puzzle game she likes, her stickers, and you just quietly look at her and say, oh, no, you don't have that. You didn't go to the corner yet. At which point she'll throw
that too.
Okay. Now, I want you to do that for at least a year. Done that?
Okay.
And the reason I say that, Mom, and it isn't that there's some formula that is going to work in a year. It's just that you're going to do that, not five times or not eight times, because that's not enough. That's why I use the confession example, which is, you know, you go to confession and you've been saying a lot of the same sins for 30 years. And I'm saying to you, well, why haven't you stopped by now? So your little girl, whom you're trying to discipline and show her some self-control and get her to develop a little bit of nicer behavior, well, that's going to, that took you 30 years and you're still doing it. I always tell parents, your goal in your discipline is not to necessarily stop the behavior. That's tough. Your goal is to teach a lesson. You do X, I do Y. Now, I'm going to keep doing Y. So you keep doing X, I'm going to do Y. Over time, the behavior does change. So your biggest thing, Mom, your key here, by far, your key is you've got to make that corner stick. If you can't make that corner stick, then what has happened is that your little girl is developing a perception that says, I don't have to listen to you. And it won't just be about the corner. It'll be about a bunch of other stuff, too. Try to get her dressed, and she'll fight you. Try to get her to stay in bed, and she'll fight you. Because, in her little three-year-old mind, hey, I don't have to do that. Get away from me. And what you want to do is you want to say, no, yes, you do, and watch. Here's what I'm going to do about it. Do you have my book, Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime?
No.
Okay. It deals with all this. All of it. Tells you how to take charge, tells you how to use a corner, tells you how to teach a three-year-old compliance in a shorter period of time. 100 of the most common discipline questions I get asked. It's on my website. It's signed. It's my most popular discipline book by far. If you wish, obviously you don't have to go there, but if you do, I think it would answer a lot of these struggles, and it's a small price to pay to have your little three-year-old start to listen to you a little better. Thank you, Mom. Thank you for the call. This is Dr. Ray.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Evidences for Christianity. For decades after Christ's resurrection, the gospel stories were circulated only by word of mouth. How is it possible that the gospel records were transmitted without error before being written down? The answers are intriguing. For one thing, in ancient Judaism, memories were perfected by endless repetition, patterned learning, and mnemonics, and it helped that the culture demanded complete recall. Further, the gospel stories were protected by the oversight of living eyewitnesses and the ever-present opposition in the crowds who were anxious to correct any misreporting. Finally, the reporting of embarrassing events about the authors themselves tells us that they were more interested in telling the truth than covering up. And all that is evidence for Christianity. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of the doctor is in. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. Yeah, approaching the end of summer. That's summertime kind of music. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. I thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time for the radio program. Get a lot of email from the television show. And I think I mentioned previously that when I say to the folks, can you please call the show, I can ask some questions. Some of them say, what show? So they're like, how do you call the television show? So we tell them we have a radio show, and they're starting to become somewhat aware of it. Alrighty. I don't have much time now to take another question. I appreciate the company during this program. I want to talk just a little bit more about some of the variables that our previous caller, young mother, brought up about her little three-year-old. By their nature, three-year-olds are defiant. They're three. They have no conscience. They are walking models of fallen human nature, because really anything that would counter that self-centeredness of their fallen human nature is really not in place yet. They don't have a conscience. Very little self-control, very little impulse control. They want what they want the moment they want it, and big people are in the way. Now, there are some kids, by their nature, who are easier going. It's the way they're wired. Still doesn't mean they don't have sin nature. It just means they're a little easier going. They could lie with the best of them. And what happens, I think, with a lot of parents, and I've written about this in several of my books, there is this expectation that these young kids should be more cooperative. And you hear this when a parent says, he doesn't listen. He just doesn't listen, which means we expect him to listen. Where did we get that idea? He's so strong-willed. No, he's normal-willed. But we have been inundated. I believe that this goes back to the feet of the experts who have altered the way we look at raising children, and particularly the way we discipline, which is, why is this child not being more cooperative more quickly? Why is this not happening? What is wrong? In fact, much of the times there's nothing wrong. Parents will say to me, how long do I have to do this? And I will say, as long as it takes. Well, how long is that? I don't know. That'll be $80. We've come to expect that if we apply the right discipline formula, the child will become much more quickly cooperative. We forget, and that this Christian understanding of human nature, I believe, is so much more accurate than a secular child development understanding, which is children are born to cooperate, they want to cooperate, they want to get along, and if you just do it the right way, they will. You can do it the right way, up one side and down the other, and that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to cooperate. They are who they are. And the average three-year-old, four-year-old, five-year-old is going to push. So what? That's why they need parents. We will generally have to discipline till the time they leave our house. The discipline changes. A 14-year-old may not throw himself on the floor and melt down. I said may not. Unfortunately, a lot of them are. But discipline is a parental lifelong effort. Well, I appreciate your company. Appreciate you being with me. Good Lord permitting. I'll see you tomorrow. And I pay a little visit to Hayes and Salina, Kansas, Divine Mercy Radio. Delighted to be heading out that way this weekend. Walk with God. Hold your children tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.